Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, somebody has to, and it's not going to be me, I'm sorry, but somebody has to put together a clip of all the different noises you make. It'll be a little reel for you. That's great. Yes. This time we got the exciting drums followed by the cackle of Gregor.
Oh.
Did I identify that correctly? Was that the cackle of Gregor?
You did. I don't know if it was the most accurate Gregor laugh, but it definitely was an homage.
Look, you know, animated shows have lots of cackles. That's one of the biggest things that you got in animation is cackles. And he's got a distinctive cackle, and I think you nailed it.
Mm. You know, I love that cackle. I didn't, and I'll tell you, we'll talk about it when we get to Gregor. I don't think I realized how much I really loved it till it emerged in this episode.
Oh yeah, it really added a lot of flavor and horror character, and added to the upsetting vibes of this, I think, great episode. Anyway, let's get into it. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person with the good cackle is Ken Knapsack. This is the Bad Batch Report. We are discussing episode 14 of Bad Batch, War Mantle, written by Damani Johnson, directed by Stuart Lee. Only two episodes left, Ken. Do you feel like we are heating up toward the big finish?
We've been saying for a couple weeks, the foot is going to be on the gas. And man, I think we're there. The engine is revving up.
Yes, the emotional trauma, foot on the gas is foot on the gas of emotional trauma. It's all happening. I wanted to ask you, because I started pontificating about this last week, as we're heading toward a little bit of an end game and we can get a sense of which threads might be resolved, which conflicts might be most fully addressed. Are you feeling like there is a season two waiting in the wings that hasn't been announced, but they're already working on?
Yes. Okay. Quick answer. Yes. I had this thought. We're going to, you know, we're jumping all over the plot board today, I guess, already. And it's wonderful. I really don't think Hunter's going to be back with the team this season.
Okay.
Meaning he'll be fine. He'll be rescued. But like in my head, maybe they spring him out in the final episode. I don't know. I'm bad at predictions, but just I had that feeling of like, we're going to keep going. This is going to be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that sort of this Camino thread, which we will talk about aplenty, is wrapping up. The end of the clones, the beginning of the stormtroopers, so much what this is about.
Right.
The ultimate conflict with Crosshair. That's really feeling like this is all where we're going. But that is leaving other threads about kind of Omega's identity and the Bad Batch's kind of ultimate choice of who they want to be in the galaxy. Hunter in particular. How does he choose to define soldier? Some of those bigger things feel like they are going to be left for staring off at the horizon and you know, still addressing. I think some elements of them will absolutely be addressed, and I think this season will have a sense of closure. But even the dangle that we all got excited about of Omega's relationship to Boba Fett and that sort of its relevance to this era of Star Wars storytelling, maybe that will still pop up this season, but it feels like great fodder for season two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of maybe the overall feeling I had from this episode. Again, individual plot points. Yeah. Again, I could see this Hunter being sprung 5 minutes into next week, but just, I had that sense of we got a little long game going, and I'm excited for that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, with that, let's get into this episode. What was your overall reaction? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it? Do you want it to be a Tuca doll so you can hug it? How did you feel about this?
Yes, yes, Ed, yes. I wrote, here we go. You're in the great game now. Yeah, I look at last week's episode, which you and I really loved and celebrated. I look at last week, and it's like, look, they saved some money. They bought some time. And now we have one of the most cinematic episodes of Star Wars TV ever.
Ever.
And that's why the so-called fillers are often just smaller, intimate, a little less budget. And so you can put all the money into something like this and whatever's coming in these last two episodes.
Yeah, just shockingly beautiful. Everything has been beautiful this season, the level of anime or this episode or show of animation. But this was really next level, I thought.
Yeah, and you and I were joking off camera. I'm like, every week I say to myself, don't call the show beautiful. And you said something so great, Joseph. You're like, why? We can say it if we want, because it is. And it is. What a gorgeous cinematic episode. The direction, the little details you could get out of so much stuff here. It's blowing my mind, and I'm going to celebrate that every time.
Yeah, look, I tell my wife I love her every day. I'm going to call Bad Batch beautiful every episode of our podcast. I got no problem with that because it really, really is.
Mm-hmm.
I think just like the quality of light in the trees, just the quality of the end. I think the reason that it's just like, it's not just like aesthetic, like cool, that's extra good, you know? It's the fact that it affects how I feel emotionally about this show. Like just the quality of that forest planet really brings out all the moods that you get from a forest, from like the dark horror of the beginning to the like, you know, horrific irony of this kind of beautiful, peaceful mountain that's containing this utter horror. The fact that the actual forest is palpably beautiful makes all those emotions stronger for me.
You're exactly right. They are not just showing off. Maybe there's like 10% of look at this, right? Now that tree looks like a tree. As they should. It's not. It's so effective. There's little tiny moments, the use of light, all those things to create the picture, and you're able to just tell more of the story, even on facial expressions. When, you know, we all remember when the Clone Wars first popped up, you know, they're still perfecting the art. I get it. Technology changes as it should. It should get better. But, like, you know, you couldn't tell all the stories with a close-up of Ahsoka's eye, you know, or her face. Like, and now you can. And so they're, it's just an amazing tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, and there's this one shot where when Omega and Wrecker are playing that game on Gonki, and it's Omega's turn, and she kind of scooches forward in the chair, and it's just like I almost rewound just for that, for Omega scooching forward in a chair, because it was so shockingly realistic, and like it makes me feel even more connected to Omega because she feels so real. It feels such a human little gesture.
Yeah. I want to dive into that for a second, because I had put another moment I was going to kind of jokingly put in the action moment. But when they tell Wrecker and Omega to go back to the ship, they're going downhill and Wrecker and Omega. But Wrecker is taking careful downhill kind of slippery slope steps, right?
Especially for a big guy.
Yeah. And I had the exact same reaction. I rewound it. I rewound it to be number one that I kind of really see that. And two, yeah, it's there and it's subtle. But it's very realistic, and also it's about this character. It's about Wrecker. He's just like, oh, be careful. And the scooch moment. There's another great moment. I think when she finds the tracker, and another moment where she calls Wrecker up to the front. Right, they got to go, and she does wave. And it's you could have done that 9-10 years ago. I get that. I'm not saying that, but it's such a little intimate detail, like you said. It draws me in more. You're exactly right.
Yeah, it makes me scooch forward. yeah, so beyond the beauty and the emotion, achieved through the beauty, man, was this episode great because it was horrible.
Yeah.
In terms of what was going on, just that great sense of doom and dread from, like, just, you know, it starts with, like, an actual nightmare, right, of being chased through a dark forest. And it was really great to have an episode that swung back into a lot of action, but all of the action being this just endless, oppressive, inescapable horror of the Empire. So there's just that great mood and energy throughout. Been kind of saying, like, a part of the story of Bad Batch, and one of the things that I've been excited for since the announcement is that I was going to tell the story of this era. Mm. And we're really following that story, almost like the Republic becoming the Empire, is a main character of this show. And this was such a huge part of that story. And it really got me, honestly, is a fan who has, you know, lived with this for a long time and grew up with the original trilogy in particular, that this episode was kind of a celebration of the value of canon storytelling. Mm. In that it had, like, lots of fun details of, like, oh, Gregor, he touches lots of different, you know, eras and shows. Commandos, they've got a great history. We'll talk about all those. But then kind of this big picture canon thing of, like, this realization sitting on my couch, and I'm about halfway through the episode, and I just kind of have to almost pinch myself and go, I'm watching the origin of the Stormtroopers.
Yeah.
It's got a name. It's called War Mantle. Like, this is just cool, and it has a value because you've lived with this world for so long, and this is a part of it that's really interesting to tell, of, like, the beginnings of the Stormtroopers. I thought that was huge.
It was gigantic, and beyond just the happy Star Wars nerd giggle at TK units, right? And I know that, but yeah, to actually see it, I jotted that down that note as well, and we're going to dive into it, I'm sure, in a bit. But this is answer some questions that we've had since 83 and beyond, and 99 and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And lots of storytelling has kind of been able to nibble around the edges of this, but this is right. The full meal. And obviously we will get into all of those details, and, you know, cutting back and forth from Kamino to this base that is so original trilogy Empire, is that great mashup of all the eras, these two eras meeting and transitioning. And then the other big picture thing for me that I really wanted to shout out at the top is, I think there's been a lot in this whole show, but then particular moments, like the great moment with Hauser on Ryloth, but then this with Gregor, really, really recontextualizing the clones as heroes.
Yeah.
I say recontextualizing because obviously the individual characters are heroes throughout the Clone Wars. But then, you know, when you're watching them be heroes in the Clone Wars and you're learning that they have individual personalities and they are luminous individuals within the Force, as Yoda says, like, there's always a little bit of this, like, but they're also pawns. Mm-hmm. And it's really great to see all these characters get to be fully, absolutely no doubt about it, heroes of like, no, wait a minute. We have ideology. We have perspective. We realize what's being asked of us and we're saying bullshit. I'm not doing that. It's really fist pumping to have lived with these characters for so long and get to see them not as pawns of a coming horror, but as heroes who can make a choice and say no.
Yeah, real big stuff, real great stuff. There's some quotes of Gregor that I wrote down that are just simply, I don't even know where to put them into our conversation other than right here. Of just like hearing him just be like, you know, if you ask me, it's the ones who want to stay here are really defective. I love that line. I love that. It works as comedy, but works as a statement as well.
Yeah, no, a ton of great ones. We're soldiers of a republic that doesn't exist is like, that's heartbreaking.
But, yes.
But really makes it clear of like, yeah, we fought for the republic in the way the empire is behaving is not the republic that we work so hard to defend is really great. A peek into the characters.
Yeah. Amazing stuff with Lama Su as well. Yeah. And the empire is not the republic. It was a great sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive into then the big themes, the ideas at stake in this episode. What grabbed you? What did you feel like was at stake or being discussed?
Yeah, I failed my theme homework assignment a little bit because I just focused on one and I just focused on the action and everything. But there's a couple. I have the idea of the Empire always wins, but that has to do with your choices and what you can do to fight against that. And the idea of helping others, which is pretty big to Star Wars. But I really focused on this one of survival. The Kaminoans know they're about to be killed off. You know, the Empire's canceled all of our contracts. That's pretty ominous. I know what that means. Gregor just having from the start of the episode, the need to stay alive and now the need to survive in this new time. And, you know, hey, we kind of know where he ends up and he has some sort of survival for a while there, for a long while. This is kind of the start of that. And this idea of the clones themselves, like you were talking about, of just the way Gregor's like, I've been trying to tell you, that's our replacements. And it's just this transition in how you can survive, adapt and change. And a lot of it does have to do with your choices as you move forward into a new chapter, new generation.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think you knocked it out of the ballpark with your theme homework. I think that's really what's at stake in this episode. I kind of broke it down into a couple different ideas. In the one I think that you're talking about a lot, I kept thinking about is fight or flight. That almost all the characters we're seeing have been pushed into a corner by the Empire because it is everywhere and it is not allowing the options that the Republic used to. Like, I really like that the Kaminoan conversation is Nala Se being like, but we've got a great business and everybody knows it and has our business cards. Like, yes. Great. If they don't want to do business anymore, what's the problem? We'll get more business. Yeah. Lama Su being, the problem isn't so much finding new business. It's that they're going to murder us. They're going to take our technology and kill us.
Yeah, I'm laughing only because it had a little bit of unintentional comedy. If dark gallows humor, indeed. Yeah, I love that exchange. You're so right.
It really is like, yeah, should we find another job? No, our current boss is going to kill us. So you can't. Yeah. So obviously there's that. We must leave to ensure our survival, Lama Su says. That's, you know, flight.
But
all through this, people are choosing fight or flight in different ways. You know, Hunter is really unsure about rescuing Gregor at first. Right. You know, he doesn't have intel. I think he is really worried about protecting the family around him, and this is a choice that Hunter keeps being presented with, keeps dragging his feet, and then kind of keeps doing the right thing of, you know, choosing to try to help other people. You know, Omega makes this argument that it the choice should not be flight, it should be fight. You know, says Rex's friend is in trouble, that's more important than getting paid. It's a very Star Wars theme. That Echo moment is really big about choosing fight over flight. When Hunter says, you know, we've been going in blind without any reinforcements, and Echo saying, you did that on Skako Minor when you rescued me. I'd still be trapped in that place if you hadn't. If there's a chance that trooper's being held against his will, we have to try to get him out. I want to come back to that in just a second. And then, you know, the episode starts with flight, right? With Gregor literally saying, you're making me do something I don't believe in and trying to run away, you know? So there's just these constant fight or flight choices going on, and there's some noble moments where, it's kind of fist pumping because our heroes choose to try to fight, but then they are overwhelmed and end up in flight.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. Well said. It's really interesting to, once again, Omega gets to the core of things, and the Echo thing was, Echo thing was pretty powerful for me too. Not just the personal connection, but it is that big theme that and you said, I love breaking it down into fight or flight and the often that choice you talked a lot about with the Jedi about when is it time to fight, kind of connects in a way to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fighting for greater good and fighting for people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I really love that connection was made with Echo of course there's been a lot in this whole series where he has a perspective of he fought more actively with the Jedi. He knows Rex. He knows the regs. He knows the kind of whole state of the galaxy in the battle. It seems a little bit more clear than the rest of the Bad Batch, who seem like they went on their missions and they did their thing, you know? But this really personal viewpoint of I had my control and my identity taken away from me. And the fact that he says, if there's a chance that trooper's being held against his will, really gets these ideas of big Star Wars themes of choice that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to put a pin in that to specifically ask you. I also had this sort of bittersweet reaction of what Echo is saying is so morally pure, and you want to agree and you want to have the Bad Batch try to do the right thing. But there's this kind of a slight practical difference in that they don't have Anakin Skywalker. Just on a practical level, I felt the pain of that, because it was Echo was making this argument of make the choice that you did for me when you were unflinching as soldiers.
Yeah.
But then from Hunter's perspective of just trying to keep everybody safe and alive, it's kind of a big difference that they don't have, one of the most powerful Jedi ever to exist fighting alongside them.
Would have been fun if Wrecker's we don't have one of those saber guys. I'm right there with you, because I've mentioned some stuff before where Hunter's going through a lot, and he's still, there's a couple times in this episode where I'm like, have you chosen a side yet, Hunter? Come on, you're there. You're on the right side. Keep going. But again, it's a journey, and it can be a long journey for some, shorter for others. So I've always kind of had this Hunter says things that are probably smart, safe, and responsible, particularly with Omega. I even liked in this episode. No, coming here, negotiable. You going back to the ship, not negotiable. I like moments like that. It's very realistic, because it adds not just nuance to the discourse, but adds just a realistic angle to the decisions we have to make in life. Sometimes they're hard. Sometimes they should be hard, and you have to overcome that or pick the right time to fight, I guess.
Yeah, well, and I think that through line in this episode is so great of Hunter, listening to the arguments and wanting to do the right thing, but wanting to try to keep people as safe as possible. And, a great sort of resolution of this fight or flight theme that Hunter chooses flight for everybody else, gives the order of this is not one of those, moments where we're going to do something really clever and get out of this. We are overwhelmed. You will be captured too. Go.
Yeah,
is powerful, and I think it shows that Hunter is so desperately trying to keep the people he is immediately in charge of and that he loves safe. And every time he tries to rescue somebody else, it puts them in danger. And he seems like he kind of morally knows that's right. But this makes it so clear that he is absolutely willing to risk himself.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I just think is. It makes me feel for poor Hunter of hey, if I was all alone, I'd probably take a lot of risks.
Yeah.
It's trying to keep everybody else safe that I'm so concerned about.
Yeah. 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 I've really enjoyed, I'm really enjoying, I'm teasing the Hunter or the Hunter storyline of make a choice. It's been a slow burn, but it's built to this. And now it's literally in his face in the form of Crosshair.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a legitimate thing to discuss, and I think some fan discussion or criticism is kind of centered on a lot of this season is Hunter, refusing the call.
Yeah.
We've highlighted that a lot of how Hunter's just well, we just got to figure out how to keep our heads down, and the one thing I'm committed to is Omega's part of the squad, and we're going to raise her and keep her safe. But then everywhere he goes, he gets pulled into, working for the rebels, that is the call, and he still is refusing it.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's you know, how often in life. It's the old, God sent you a boat, a raft, an inner tube, and he didn't take any of them, Hunter.
I'm waiting for a plane. That's my thing. Yeah. The other big thing theme for me, which is, you know, also just kind of the plot, but just this feeling of the suffocation of the empire, of just
yes,
how much the empire is everywhere. You know, the omnipresence of the empire is what's causing everyone to have to respond in this fight or flight way. But I just thought this episode did a great job of making you feel it, right? Because every character is struggling to stay out of the reach of the empire. Gregor is the catalyst. Then we're watching the B plot with the Kaminoans or Kaminoans trying to survive the empire. I love that Rex, even in his message, is like, I'm being chased right now by the empire, so I don't even have a time to finish this holo call.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then of course all of our heroes throughout the main episode, you know, and even just those opening shots of that beautiful dark nightmare forest with the close-up of the massives, you know,
yes,
it's the literal and metaphorical beast of the empire chomping at a character's heels, and that's the whole thing throughout the episode, right? And then yep, they make it really concrete with just getting this really, really straightforward canon of these recruits come from all over the galaxy. They swear loyalty to the empire. They're not as skilled, but there's an endless supply of them, says Gregor.
Yeah. God, man, I love when you say something that gets me excited, friend. I just love the way you painted this wonderful picture of this episode. Starts with running. It's a great sequence I'm going to talk about later, I'm sure. But like literally the empire, the new empire, the one that's forming, biting at the heels. And it leads to one of my, I don't know why it shook me more than it shook me. The idea of Lamassu's potentially last moments, we'll discuss that in the canon and lore stuff, but do that line of you know, Admiral Rampart, what are you doing here? And Rampart's like, I'm disappointed. And like, and Lamassu just kind of, even though Lamassu knows the score, Lamassu just kind of given that answer of like, I've done everything you've at, like, I've served you. I held up my end of the bargain. And just the idea of like, that don't work. The Empire don't care. It's not the Republic. The Empire always wins in the situation. You're about to be killed. And just there was something real ominous about that. And it was the Empire coming, and they will catch you, which is what we want to fight against, which is what Star Wars is going to be dealing with here for the next 19 years or so in storytelling. But you know what I mean? Like, so from that moment of the biting of the heels to the Empire's like, no, we're here. You failed. We're going to kill you.
Yeah, no, I think that's really powerful because, you know, following this B plot of the Kaminoans, it's not like, I think their story is one where like they made a deal with the devil out of greed. You know, that's very much Lucas's perspective of so much of the prequel era is the dangers of greed, right? And Lamassu even has that great line of like, we empowered them, you know?
Yeah.
I've got it written down somewhere, I'll find it, but you know what I mean. But you know, watching this story, it's not like Lamassu is like, and now we're going to take over the empire, overthrow the empire. We're just like, we're trying to get new samples for you so you will continue your business. Like, Lamassu isn't actually doing anything from the empire's perspective.
Yeah.
That is horrific. It's just that the empire is like, no, we don't want anyone else to have any power. And you got to go.
It strikes a similar chord to Lando and on Bespin and Empire, right? This deal's getting worse all the time. You know, bread, all the deal, all those wonderful classic lines. But it's like, yeah, the house is going to win here, and it's about trying to topple the house, I guess.
Yeah. And I feel like this idea of the Empire just sort of suffocating and chasing down everything, it gets repeated again and again. The actual amount of these early stormtroopers and clone commandos who are not as skilled. We get to actually see it in action. They are not as skilled, but they are everywhere, and there's too many of them. And that extends to all those V-wings, you know, chasing down the Marauder. Again, we get that sense that, absolutely, Tech and Wrecker are more skilled, but there's just too many of them. There's this swarm quality of the V-wings, right? That they're not a threat by themselves, but there's just so many of them. They're everywhere. And then even to me, just like the size of the installation, that this idea of like, well, it's not supposed to be anything on this planet, you know, allegedly. And then there's this huge, huge, base, this installation inside a mountain, which is also an imposing, immovable object, you know. And then on top of all of that, I really felt like they just like it's everywhere. You can't get away from it, is even in the music cues. I love that Kevin Kiner doesn't just go straight for the, you know, Imperial March of Empire Strikes Back. These are all these cues from Star Wars, A New Hope, right? Yeah. Of just the little kind of cues that feel like they eventually became the backbone of what the Imperial March exploded into in Empire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I expected to hear like they split up. They're in levels 4 and 5 now. Yeah. It was wonderful, wonderful, because it totally evoked the feeling trapped and lost inside the Death Star, inside the inner workings of the Empire. It worked on that level for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought that was a really great theme that is like it's explicitly the plot, but then you were made to feel it in lots of different visual and oral ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Any other thoughts on the themes of this episode before we dive into kind of how they reflect bigger Star Wars ideas?
No, let's cannonball on into the deep end then.
Yeah. So what do you got there?
I just, again, the overall, this idea of the Empire, I keep saying the Empire always wins because I'm not rooting for them. It's just, you know, there's hope at the end of this tunnel. But how this all does boil down into the choices you need to make in the bigger Star Wars picture, and how I always keep going that this show of the many things it's doing, I really do love how it's laying the groundwork for rebellion, and those pieces are going to have to connect to people like Enfys Nest. They're going to have to connect even more to Saw Gerrera and Galen Erso, all the stuff that we know and all the things we're yet to learn. I always go to the show connecting to that bigger perspective of the choice to fight. Like you said, fight or flight's great. How do you survive? And then in this new era, you change, adapt, and grow, and as you find your own identity. It's all this big stew of that picture of the rebellion for me that I continue to really just love in this show.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think I was processing some of the same things. You were processing it from a hopeful perspective of there are heroes who are fighting back.
It's rare for me to go hopeful, so, you know.
No, it's great. I'm thrilled with it. I think I was affected by just that big Star Wars theme of change and facing the unknown. That change is going to come. Sometimes it's just natural, you know, the natural change of life, of getting older or taking the next step on your adventure or that kind of thing. But then there's also like the Jedi philosophy of there's some things out of your immediate control as an individual. And it's like, just, I felt that huge amount of change and facing the unknown from Hunter really being like, we don't have intel. Like, they'd maybe do this if I had any clue what was going on, but like, they just can't know because it's new. Right. And then just everything they're facing, from the changing codes to troopers that they don't recognize to, you know, Kamino is like, no, everything is changing now. It's like this brick wall of sudden change. And our characters, even though they're aware of it, still kind of can't seem to fully accept it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not quite there. Sometimes you're going to be thrown into a cell and asked to really decide.
Yeah. Yeah. In tech, just like tech has a lot of evidence that maybe the normal codes won't work, but he's just kind of like not seeing or accepting change. Like, well, I put the code in.
Yeah.
He's like, you're still not getting it, dude.
Yeah. There's some great reads by D. Bradley Baker on Gregor. Just like, idiot. Like, you said, like, are you not listening? Are you not connecting to the themes of the story in front of us?
Yeah. I think the other big Star Wars theme for me is one that you mentioned, and I think it is in some ways the kind of the real heart of this episode amidst the horror, is that idea that helping others is the right choice, right? Maybe you can finesse what is strategically the best way to do it, but this idea that you can't know that somebody is in horror, you know, and not try to help them. And Omega kind of constantly having that perspective and saying, well, that's more important than money, right? And then with the argument from Echo of like, we have to try, and maybe they were wrong, maybe they were right that absolutely someone needs to be helped, but maybe Hunter was right that, but we needed to approach it in a different way. And yeah. I like that it lends itself to that question of practicality while still really presenting this strong, consistent Star Wars morality that, of course, we help others. Of course, that's more important than money.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Yeah, helping others is Anakin will tell you, his mom says, pretty important.
Yes. Yes. Any other big themes you wanted to look at?
No. And I don't know. Sometimes I might repeat some of these connection motifs, but I just think that this show is really a long form essay on this transition and how we get from here to the rebellion. It really all, and even to Star Wars Rebels, which is more even, you know, the actual building blocks are there, and we're putting them all together, sometimes literally with the cells. This is the emotional beginning of that. This is how it's happening. Gregor just kind of looking around and going, yeah, I was instructor here. I got out. And the ones that stayed are defective. That's the choices everyone's going to start making.
Yeah. In that line about, you know, they swear loyalty to the Empire, you know, and you get that picture of stormtroopers that they are, you know, they're drinking the Palpatine Kool-Aid. They're drinking they're taking in the propaganda of, you know, the this great big story of it's not just the Anakin or the Jedi who gave in to fear. It is the Republic, right? That Palpatine successfully created this other to fear of the Separatists, convinced everybody, you know, enough people in the galaxy that the only way to be safe is to be adversarial and to be strong and violent and push back. And you can just, there's nothing utterly explicit in this episode, but for me, I can just feel that of like, why would recruits across the galaxy say yeah to this, to joining this and to really believing in this? And, you know, that one stormtrooper we get to hear call Gregor a traitor. Like, for me, it all flows from that idea of propaganda of like, do you want to, you know, keep having a safe and secure society? Well, then suit up. Here's a blaster, you know.
Yeah.
Always see everything and everyone as a threat and see yourself as this great big defender from the threat, you know?
Here's a big, sweet, sugary glass of wild berry flavored sheaf. Just drink it, drink that Kool-Aid down.
Drink that Kool-Aid, drink that sheave Kool-Aid. Yep, which Gregor was having none of. And with that, with sheave Kool-Aid, I know I need a break. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss a ton of great action, comedy, and a lot of canon. We'll be back in just a moment.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com, that's JENILANDA.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to continue our discussion of episode 14 of The Bad Batch, War Mantle. Let's talk action. Ken, there's a lot of action in this episode. What were some of the moments that spoke to you?
Man, let me. Where do I begin? Just from the beginning, the opening chase on Darrow. I mean, I'll say there was a couple repeated beats. I mean, this is a super nitpick. It's not at all, but just I was like, okay, this is. I watched it the second time. I was like, oh, this is longer than I thought, but it worked. It was so effective, and the tension built, and all that ends in the capture of Gregor. But that just was a wonderful sequence, full of action, full of theme, like you brought up and we talked about. And again, beauty, just. Beauty, just a beautiful, tense chase to start the episode.
Yeah, no, I kind of wrote this down in a jokey way, but I was legitimately emotionally affected by it. In that whole chase, like everything about it is great. The close-ups of the Massifs are terrifying. But when Gregor gets stunned in the butt, that was, I wrote it down in a jokey way because I couldn't help myself. But my actual emotional reaction was I've never seen that, like a glancing blow from the stun bolt, so that was like kind of felt fresh. Yeah. Maybe it's been seen before, but I'm not remembering in the moment. But it added to that nightmare quality. That's literally a nightmare of like I am running through the dark forest from something that is going to devour me, and now I can't run fast anymore.
Yeah,
it was horrifying.
Yeah, no, it all works. And when I said there was repeated beats, just. Couple times it felt like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where I would think it's Eric Idle that's charging the castle, maybe Cleese, and they keep showing them running, and they cut to him at the front door, which is hilarious. So I just a couple times I kept going back to the animals, so the Massifs, and I was like, okay, but all that ends so well, and that that limp when he's just pulling away,
right,
and stunned. I had the thought of like, is that possible? I mean, is it just because he's stronger? Is it a bad shot? Maybe that's the answer too, or just the whole tension of it. It was something new, and it was wonderful.
Yeah. Maybe better armor. Who knows? But yeah, that whole opening sequence was great. But the lower leg stun, man, amazing. I really liked a ton of the action once they get into the base, obviously. But one one beat in particular I liked is Gregor throat punching a stormtrooper.
Yes.
It's a really quick shot because they throw the smoke grenade and Hunter is choking the clone commando to knock him out without killing him. And you haven't learned yet that Gregor is the instructor who hasn't taught them everything. But then when I watch it the second time, it's like, that's a move he didn't teach them. It's like, you know, one thing you have to watch for in this armor is your neck is actually vulnerable. And he used that.
Love that. Love that. I love him. Yeah. I don't train him everything. I'm not dumb. Come on.
Yeah. Gregor was a good comedy machine. What were some other moments for you?
I love this little moment of a stun grenade shocking multiple troopers. Yeah. You know, just liked it. Hey, no, what are you going to, it's too violent. And then also, there's one little moment where like Hunter ducks to like the side and a stormtrooper runs by and then Hunter like stuns him.
And I think that's actually Tech.
Is that Tech? Oh, Tech. I apologize. I'm just giving the goggles. I apologize. Yeah, that I, well, hilarious. And another Tech humor moment. I thought I really, it too had some Monty Python type of ding. Stun gun. We got you.
It was hilarious of that. Yeah, they just the pulling over in the side and that, oh, you ran right in front of me. Well, this is what you get then.
Right.
A general action question. How did you feel about them continuing to just be like their policy is stun?
It's so funny. I saw a rather upset comment about it on our friend Alex Damon's Instagram page. Or someone was very complimentary to the episode, but they were like, I'm just tired of them stunning. Just kill. Just kill. And it made me like it more. Not no disrespect to that person's opinion. But I heard their opinion and I went, no, I think I like it. They are still at the time. And again, they're shooting stormtroopers. But there's this idea of fighting brothers and understanding who might be under that mask and what they might be going through with the chip and whatnot. And will that play going forward? Do they even have that conversation? Do we see it on screen? I don't know. I don't think, but like of, hey, we might need to up the game. Like, I don't know. So I love that it was still there. It meant something to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes to a little bit of this contextualization of, you know, the stormtroopers and in the clone commandos who are either still being impacted by the chip or are, you know, making a not great choice out of their individual ability to choose. They're just firing away, you know, on questioning, and that the Bad Batch is still kind of doing things their way of stun them just in case. I really enjoyed it. I think it really has some power. And I think, you know, there is something to be said for, well, we have known that this is a setting that some blasters have since the first film.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really interesting to see heroes just choose to use it.
Yeah, yeah. I really like it.
And the sound effects, cool.
Sound effects, cool. And look, I think that, they might have to change the setting. They might. It's going to be part of this. People are dying. The V-Wings, I mean, there's death, you know. But it's not just, and going back to that comment, I don't mean to call out this random fan of Star Wars Explained, but like, I get it's a kid's show. It's not because it's a kid's show. It's a clear thematic choice for this squad, and it has purpose.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's going to serve them well for a while here. In this episode, one of my favorite action moments was when they didn't have that option. when they're waiting for pickup, and that clone commando is on them, and they throw him into the opening, and he gets shot by his own dumb troopers. And then my favorite thing, Ken, falls from a high place with a scream.
Yeah. Have we delved deep into why you like that? I love that you love it because it's fun. And it's a weird Star Wars tradition too, but I love that you're.
Yeah, it's a Star Wars tradition.
Yeah, I see it. I go, he's making it out.
Yeah, it's the heart of adventure serial, right? You know, like it's cool to have a sword fight. It's way cooler to have it on the top of the castle. You know, it's you know, cool for Indiana Jones to be punching some dudes. It's way cooler on a rope bridge over a chasm. It's just this literalization of heighten the stakes that is such a tradition of adventure serials. And I mean, I glommed onto it when I was a kid. Like I remember a couple of times that. My family moved around a lot, and I don't know why I remember this one particular time where we were looking at different places we were going to live, and my mom let me bring my Stormtrooper action figure, and I kept trying to vote on where we would live based on if there were high places where I could play. Like, I remember, like, there was one that had a fireplace that had a high mantle. I was like, we got to get this one because my Stormtrooper can fall from here.
There you go. I love it.
So it's buried deep, my love of... characters getting hit by something and then falling from a high place.
Yeah.
But it was just cool. A cool move where also it showed that, like, yeah, no, we're choosing stunners, stun blast first, but we're also trying to survive, like you said, with the V-Wings. And also, like, the clone commandos are a bigger problem. So, and this guy's on us, and he's got to be dealt with. So just shove him out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, yeah.
What are some other action moments from you?
Yeah, I call it another Temple of Doom memory, and I know that this is used elsewhere, Fugitive as well. So, but I am an Indiana Jones fan, so I always go to Indiana Jones. But we talked about the kart race last week. Now we got the running out of the reactor port and just standing on that tiny ledge and just oops, nothing but a rope bridge and, you know, alligators down below there. I really just enjoyed that. I had a good laugh. Whether it got super intentional or not, I don't know. It just makes me think of it, and it's just it's a fun, you know, serial adventure. One problem leads to another, and I love that.
Yeah, nowhere to go pipe is great.
Yes.
Always great. Jumping back to slightly earlier, I liked the moment, too, where they were taking down the stormtroopers left and right, and that kind of caused the, like, I thought you said you trained them, which was a funny line.
Yeah.
But then they are still being led by the clone commandos. That's the War Mantle project, right? Mm-hmm. In that scene where the clone commando is smarter and, you know, skips over the elevator and you know, actually does manage to shoot up poor Gregor. And then they have the amount of times they need to stun him.
Yes.
To take him down really upped the terror of, like, not only are we being overwhelmed by these crappy stormtroopers, they're still threats. There are so many of them. Yeah. But then the clone commandos are smarter and faster and better and harder to take down. It really upped the stakes for me.
Yeah, the whole, yeah, everything about it. Raising the stakes, indeed. Like a good improv.
Yes, exactly. Any other action moments for you? Did you like Wrecker being in Omega's bedroom?
You know it. Down? That's my next thing. Wrecker the tail gunner. That's the thing I love. I love me some old-style video game gunner action. And there was also something about it this time where... Because when I do that in video games, I get really antsy, almost like I go into a weird convulsion because I get so, like, I'm really angry when I can't hit the targets. My body starts reacting physically. I start just like, oh, get let. And Wreck at one point, he was kind of leaning and had the hand on the trigger, and the other hand was kind of like holding on to, like, the gun itself in a way. And I just felt the frustration of almost just, you couldn't quite get all the V-Wings you needed as your friends being captured down below. And so beyond just me liking Wrecker as a gunner, it was a powerful sequence for me.
Yeah. I thought it was so great. The whole sequence, the fact that they had to pull away and that, yeah, you got the sense that, you know, Tech is a great pilot. Wrecker is an expert shot, is a tail gunner, and he's taken down V-Wing after V-Wing, but it's not enough because there are too many. Just great, great action sequence, because it felt like our heroes are truly trapped. You know, it doesn't matter how awesome they are. They can't get out of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All leading to Hunter's Fall, which I feel guilty, but I wrote it down as a favorite action moment.
I did too, in all caps. That's a great sequence. So close.
So close. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a cool moment of, like, yeah, they'll dip down and I'll just fly into the hole. Whoops, no. And then did you keep thinking that, oh, he's going to catch himself at some point?
I thought this was Homer Simpson falling down, like, the, what is Snake Canyon or whatever, like, now the ambulance. I thought yes, they played it very well, that it went all the way down to the bottom, you know, and broke his fall enough where I guess he could survive. And that gear's tough. But yeah, from the jump, the leap, the grabs the stairs, the knife is out, everything. Yeah, it worked really well. That's why, sorry, Hunter, it was a great sequence.
It was a great sequence because I truly felt the emotional pain. And mm-hmm. It was awesome. Any other action moments before we move on?
I'm going to put this in action. You might want to discuss it elsewhere. So I apologize if I'm stepping on the lead. I finally remembered to put on the subtitles. So nice. I call this moment Gonky Honking. The power droid finds his purpose before Gonky Sputtering. And that.
It's, sorry, I was drinking water. That was so good. That was so good. Yeah. No, we can chat about it. I had put it in canon of, like, a power droid being used for power.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But with everything going on with him and the defective, and every week, you know, Omega's trying to fix him and everything. Gonky Honking is one of my favorite moments.
Oh, yeah. So good. And did you feel for poor Gonky when he got lit up?
Absolutely. I mean, this guy can't buy a break. And he's a hero.
Gonky is a hero, and Omega's going to fix him again. He's going to be okay. Gonky's going to be okay.
Going to be okay.
All right. Did you have some favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness?
Oh, there's definitely some comedy, whimsy, weirdness. The little tiny whimsy, Omega mimicking the knife spin in the beginning. I thought that was really good.
Beautiful whimsy, but also just like this show has done a really great job of keeping that thread of Omega where she is observant and repeats behavior. Often Hunter's really alive. And I think it all those little moments add up to paying off so much in this episode where she really doesn't want to leave Hunter behind. Right. Mm-hmm. There's this connection between the two of them.
Love those little moments. Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely great. That was one I had written down. I also liked you said there was nothing on this planet, Wrecker says, and Tech says that data appears to be inaccurate. I like that Tech in that moment is being, you know, a good scientist and saying, look, sometimes Wikipedia has some bad editing on it. What do you, you know, what are you going to do?
As a follow up, it's not I don't think it's related, but there's a line that Tech has that I wrote down that says not one I've ever heard of, which is just real Tech. Like, it's almost Jocasta New. Like, it's not in the records. Not in the archives. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And I think there is this. Tech really relies on knowledge and facts and recorded data. And, you know, this episode, he kind of goes back and forth between like, oh, wow, there's data that I don't have a handle on. And I want to trying to accept it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Love that.
What are some other moments for you?
I think we should talk about the Wreckers. They have a point bit. It worked really well for me in the sense of the first line was delivered so wonderfully awkward. It was such a spotlight on the, Echo's got a point. I was like, uh-oh. And it worked. And it's type of joke for me that, like, first one, that's funny. Second one, I get it. Third one, you're sticking with it, and that's the best one. So I like it.
It's the best one, and it feels honest. You know, it's not just like a bit. It is that, you know, Wrecker's not a deep thinker. He is emotional. Yep. Intuitive and a reactor, and it's nice that we can laugh at it and also agree with them of like, yeah, Wrecker, they all have good points, which is what makes choices so hard.
yep, it's like me and Grace choosing what ghost show to watch on Friday night. They're all good choices, and we all have a good option. We got to choose the one.
Yep, I understand. Yeah. Choices are hard. I really like this Omega and Wrecker moment of, you know, cutting back from the horror and the drama going on in the installation there, and Omega and Wrecker playing a game. And again, keeping up that thread that now we know, like, Omega's, you know, a master strategist, and you know she's going to beat Wrecker.
Yeah.
She says, it's still your turn. He's like, I know, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're my favorite. One of my favorite duos in Star Wars. Now it's the softer side version of Ari and the Hound to me.
Oh yeah,
great sitcom. Waiting a record, the Record Omega show taped for a live studio audience.
Yeah, I'd be happy to just watch Record process Omega beating him at various games. Another moment for me is Gregor had a bunch of great moments, but I like this early one when he's called a traitor by the. By the early stormtrooper, he says, that's Captain Traitor.
Yes. Well, the final moment is the next line of insubordinate plebe. That you just named a great rock band or created a t-shirt right there. I love that sequence. I really love Gregor. I actually was thinking I might revisit the Rebels, some Rebels episodes this weekend. I didn't realize again that how much I love Gregor.
Yeah, no, he's great and has a lot of great connections. We'll chat about him in a moment here and getting into canon. Just two other moments for me. There's this one moment where they open the elevator door and they stun two stormtroopers. The stormtroopers have a very funny scream. Ah! It's like it's partially shocked and then they're stunned in the middle of being shocked.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the last moment for me, which is, again, another moment where just like the details is what is making the show really rich, and spending this amount of time with these characters is when Omega is so concerned and she's pacing with Lula the Tuca doll, which has had that great relationship back and forth with her and Wrecker having a Tuca doll and putting it in the little home in the gun turret that they made for Omega. And it's just this connection between them that, you know,
yeah,
is really touching.
Yeah, that was great. Omega, yeah, just Omega's just a win all around as a character, and really, you know, we're coming out of a Grogu era, and, you know, that's a character that just won the hearts of the world, and Omega, you know, when you're up against Grogu, it's a hard fight as a character there, but she's just been so good and so real, and it's those little moments that, yes, maybe 10 years ago you could have done on a show, but it just feels different now in an animated show.
Yeah. And it's just so much emotional canon, as you have often said, Ken, of like, that's this connection, you know, she's so proud of this nice little home. And this is one of those times, like she told Hera, like, this is my bedroom when we're not being chased and shot at.
Right.
You know, and Lula's out of place and in her arms trying to comfort her. All right. Let's move on to canon lore connections to other stories, because there's a lot. Darrow is a new planet. A new beautiful planet on the Outer Rim. So that's new canon. And then Gregor, I did a little bit of a review to make sure that my memories are correct, that he did indeed originally appear with amnesia in the D-Squad Meeber Gascon arc, where he is working for one of the most absurdly named Star Wars characters of Mr. Borkus.
Right.
The Solistan who has captured him. And I just thought that was great, because I think, you know, that's probably still to this day, maybe not fans' favorite arc. George Lucas says it's his favorite arc. But that's probably one of those arcs back in the day, especially as it came out weekly, where people are like, what are we doing?
You're looking at one of those guests.
Did the Clone Wars almost shake you with all those straight episodes of D-Squad?
Yeah, and that's later in the run, right?
Season five.
Yeah, it's late in the run. And even so, I'm a fan of the show. And I just remember, you know, watching on Cartoon Network or wherever it was. Yeah, Cartoon Network, right? And turning off my DVR, just going to the living room, being like, give me a whiskey. Like, what am I doing this frog guy on there? But I can't wait for you and I to revisit on Clone Wars, because, yeah, I had a passing memory around the time of Rebels that, oh, yeah, Gregor was, yeah, okay, the guy, I remember that. I don't remember it, but I remember it. And so to have it all full circle and have him mention, I was blown up once, and that didn't, you know, and pull from that story. It just makes emotional canon, but even just the actual canon, it fits together real well.
Yeah. And I think just in our ongoing discussion of which episodes feel frustrating to us, maybe in the moment, because they feel episodic. They feel like just kind of a standalone adventure, not telling the main story that we're tuning in for. Mm-hmm. That those episodes build characters, they build ideas that then have, you know, greater strength. And I would say this is kind of a big canon episode, that Gregor is the clone by which we hear some of these big ideas about this transition. Like, mm-hmm. And again, they were in canon floating around, but this is so on the nose, you know. And Gregor, you know, the guy who had amnesia with Mr. Borkus, who people probably were like, ugh, at some point about that episode, some fans, not all. And here he is being real important.
Yeah, really important. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then for people who are not following along all the time, he is one of the other clones that lives with Rex. When Rex meets up with the rebels in Rebels, and he goes on to help free Lothal from the Empire.
Yeah, and has a pretty touching final scene.
He does, and I think it all tracks together well. Any other Gregor thoughts you wanted to share?
No, I love the connection. I love the connection to the commandos themselves, and anytime they pop up, and he was one, so he wore kind of that gear, and then it all tracks, it all connects. And it's not just a nostalgia pop. It is, let's actually see what we can do with the story, and I love the work. Love the reveal, because I there's no way I'm ever going to remember serial numbers, right? I don't. You know, I just, and so when that's why I really love that laugh when he first makes a laugh. I'm like, oh, wait, oh, yeah, well done, you know, and it just that worked for me.
Yeah. And I think for me, I always really liked that choice in Rebels, because I was so excited to see Rex, and then Wolf made, you know, some amount of sense, because he's a really cool, distinctive clone that a lot of people like. And then Gregor, I think because he isn't, you know, a cool name like, you know, Hound or,
yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, Fist Power, you know, he doesn't have a badass or a quirky name. It's like,
he's not a He-Man character.
Yeah. Like how did he pick his name? Like, yeah, my name's Gregor. like hanging out with your friends who are like, you know, Scar and Venom and like, I'm Philip. Okay, yeah. Cool. Your yeah. choice. So I think his name stuck with me. So I always remembered it. I was excited when he showed up. I'm like, ooh, interesting. The amnesia clone. How did he end up here? So I like this connective tissue too of like he's got this relationship with Rex and this is, you know, the next chapter of his story building to where we see him in Rebels is really cool.
Yeah.
The clone commandos. I know so many people were, I'm sure, were very excited to spend some quality time with that clone commando armor. I did a little review of that as well. Here it is from Wikipedia about the history of them. Clone commandos were first mentioned in Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, indirectly mentioned during the Battle of Geonosis. The concept of clone commandos was introduced within the Star Wars Expanded Universe novel, The Cestus Deception, and then there are many other novels, and the characters were later heavily featured in the game Star Wars Republic Commando. Clone commandos were introduced into modern Star Wars canon through the Star Wars The Clone Wars episode, Witches of the Mist. They pop up in a couple other Clone Wars episodes, and they're in Battlefront 2 as well, so lots of different ways to approach them. But I feel like I hear a lot of people really loving Commando, the Republic Commando, the Clone Commando, because they read those books or they played those video games in those kind of critical years where I think people really made a strong attachment to these commandos.
Very popular. Very popular.
Yeah. So what's your connection to them? What's your emotional reaction to seeing them?
It's a little less than those folks you described, but I just love seeing them. The glowy, the glow up eyes, as I'd call them, I guess. Is from some reason is not my favorite, but I also like the look and the bulk and it makes sense. And this story took that idea and just, you know, hey, we put them at the front of stormtroopers. They're training these new stormtroopers. And I like how that kind of fit into it, but it's just one of those fun things where you just point at the screen and you go, hey, those things. And that works too.
Yeah. And I didn't play those video games, that main video game. I didn't read those books, so I didn't have as strong of a connection. I've come to really like their design. I think when I first saw it, I think it felt a little bit like it's one of those Star Wars designs that fits in Star Wars, but then it also looks like lots of other things, you know?
Yeah.
Looks a little bit like, you know, a space marine from many other things.
Yes.
But I've come to like them partially just because of my own experience of getting to play them in Battlefront 2. And that builds a bond. You connect with them.
Yep.
And I really love them in this episode because that armor, like I've come around to the armor in general, or it's just one of those things like, yeah, maybe it's not my favorite, but it's not something I'm going to get upset about and write Twitter threads. I don't need everything to be my personal favorite, and I can respect that it is for some people. But I really love them in this episode because I felt like the literal weight of that armor and that look and that heightened ability, right? Especially in contrast to these just poorly trained stormtroopers who are just like, their power is they're a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
But the clone commandos are the real threat.
Yeah. And it just made me think too of, you know, if there's suddenly a Star Wars story where a clone commando survives the entire time and is there during the Galactic Civil War, it would make sense and be an interesting kind of wrinkle to a story that we haven't heard yet.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And then, of course, just the big picture canon I want to mention, War Mantle. This is the term that we heard when Rampart was explaining the idea of this program, that they would pair conscripted people from throughout the galaxy with a clone commando. And he shouted out the title, War Mantle, which is, of course, one of the program files Jyn and Cassian discover on Scarif.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to mention that because I think that's real cool, because when Rogue One came out, everybody was like, ooh, what are all these programs? And it's really fun to see one. And not just like a random one, like the invention of the Stormtrooper program.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Big.
Yeah. So how did you feel about this evolution of Stormtrooper armor? What did you think of that? Of the you mentioned the TK troopers. They're almost there, but not quite the classic original trilogy Stormtroopers we know.
Yeah, they're like little muffin top heads. They're a little different, right? It's a little different, but the masks are getting there. I do like that. Look, I'm a kid that was on the playground going, well, the Return of the Jedi stormtroopers have a little bit more black outline on their Under Armour. And like, I was that kid, all right? Whether or not I knew everything or was making up facts didn't matter. So I do love studying this and the different variations of the clone armor and now getting back to this really unified point. And of course, now conscripted troops in there. I like where we're at because we're not too far. I don't know. The time jumps are somewhat unclear. And we're all sometimes can get obsessed with time, the actual time in Star Wars. We're not too far after Revenge of the Sith, right? We're not too far after Order 66. And the fact that we're really seeing the first weeks, months of that transition excites me. And just on the uniform, on the armor level. So I thought it was a fun thing, fun to call it out. And fun to just see it. Like I said, this is Star Wars history we're seeing.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that they were kind of stormtroopers with mullet helmets, maybe. Mm-hmm. instead of 70s hair, they kind of have a 70s helmet with the longer sort of fins on the side, I guess.
Yeah. They had a little bit of that vibe. And Star Wars Rebels, we got a lot of those guys. A lot of them were on like speeders. They're like early biker scouts or something, or just general troops. So they had the helmet. Looked like almost Mimban mud troopers, and then they had but the mask came down. It was just kind of weird combos of all of those things.
Yeah, yeah, and not quite there in the way that we recognize it, but you get that sense that it will be very soon.
Yeah,
a couple other things here. I like the consistency in Star Wars technology that main reactors do have external exhaust ports.
Yes,
and you can shoot things into them and you can escape out of them. Lots of options with external exhaust ports.
Yeah, love them.
Obviously the V-wings and seeing the Republic gunships being the ships of terror is hard and successful. We talked about Gonki being used for actual power. Last big thing I wanted to talk about is the tragedy of Kamino. Mm-hmm. Let's get into it, Ken. Was that the end of Lama Su?
Look, you and I are in the same boat. We were listening, waiting for the laser blasts. We didn't necessarily hear them. So, hey, it's the old Game of Thrones model. If you don't see their death, good chance they're alive. But there was nothing about this episode that gives me confidence. Mos Amita being shot in the side of the head. I had more confidence.
Orn Frida, yeah.
Excuse me, Orn Frida. Mos Amita, he's lucky if that happens to him. Orn Frida getting shot in the side of the head is more faith in his survival at that moment than this moment, which had no laser blast and door closing. It just nothing about the episode gave me hope.
Yeah, no, I almost felt like it. Well, maybe there is something more. Maybe there is like they're gonna torture Lama Su for information or keep Lama Su locked up. I think that's certainly the end of Kamino being at all its own government or under its own power. But it did feel like, yeah, wow, that's that. I expected those two blaster bolts to go off, so maybe that was having a little bit more of a sensitivity, or maybe. We will see Lama Su again, or Lama Su's corpse.
Yeah.
But effectively, it felt like the moment we've been waiting for as fans of like, what happened to Kamino?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. I even the clones being pulled out, which I put all caps of like the switch. Like this is like we're seeing it. We're seeing them move out of Kamino, packing up all the guns and rifles and outfit. Just everything about it, just like. Wasn't this dramatic? Everyone's going around setting fire to Kamino. It's just like they're moving out, and this ominous nature, which is almost so businesslike, you know, just like no, we're not getting new clients. We're not. Let's say we're done. And to see, and so just I kind of liked it, and it has ramifications. And I would love to hear a little bit more. And maybe we go back and we see and get some answers. But it was tragically beautiful in its own way.
Yeah, and if we don't ever see Lama Su again, or if we get verbal confirmation that Lama Su was killed, I'll be happy with that moment because it was just so ominous and it was so Rampart just being really, really cruel of the like, I have use for a scientist. I have no use for a politician. And
yeah, no.
The door closing, like there's no wiggle room. That's it.
No, and the final look with Alisei and everything, yeah, it could tug on your heartstrings if you're open to it.
Yeah. So Nala Say, it appears, did not make it off Kamino. What do you think happened to the young clones that she was trying to get off the planet?
Interesting question, because what's Rampart's actual line in the beginning? Get like all feasible clones or something?
All viable clones, yeah.
Well, it's feasible that they're viable, I guess. Yes, that's the line. viable. It made me think of, you know, the other, clone 99s around, the defective ones and everything. They're done for. And yeah, the kids, like the Empire, I mean, do they have the time to train them? Is it resources that they're willing to use? I don't know. Hate to think. It's a youngling part two here, but
I kind of felt like it was a real, real soft touch on a bad thing happened and we're not going to dwell on it.
Yeah.
Is the way it really, really felt to me with kind of the darkness and the horror of the Empire of, mm-hmm. yeah, they're moving on to this other program. They are making use of the valuable, viable adult clones. But these young ones, like, that's the time and money to train them. And these clones have shown a lot of spirit and individuality, and that is not wanted in the Empire. So I can't imagine anything great happened with those young clones.
Yeah, I agree.
Sad and upsetting, but there you go. So one other thing I wanted to ask you while we're talking about the great tragedy of Kamino, because it kind of, for me, it's big on the plot mechanics. So Lama Su had put out the bounty to try to get Omega back in order to use her DNA to restart a better clone program to try to convince the Empire to keep buying their wares. Clearly, none of that worked. So do you feel like Lama Su's bounty is still active? Do you feel like that threat to Omega is still active?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. You got a lot of characters still out there. Some we've met, Fennec Shand and whatnot, that are still going to have, I think, an interest in what's going on, an interest in Omega. So if Nala Se picks up the credits, so to speak, and is whispering in the shadows of an Imperial laboratory, I could still see it definitely being a factor.
Yeah.
Lead to Boba Fett.
Yeah, and it felt like Cad Bane kind of took losing that bounty personally, so that mm-hmm. he might still just be on it to be like, I'm gonna capture her and then maybe have a rude awakening. It's like he doesn't have a client to return her to.
Yeah.
Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
Other than that, it was it could have been 10 more minutes longer. I really love this one, and I love the consistency of the episodes, especially when you're watching at midnight and you're an old person waiting to go to bed. I'm happy with the length of the episodes and don't expect anything else. But yeah, as we get to the end here, you know, you kind of want five more minutes. I had that thought just looking at that mountain when they're seeing the base and everything. This is a really fun episode and a lot of stuff going on. It was wonderfully written and directed. So nothing, they didn't leave anything off the table.
Yeah, I spent like the last 10 minutes going, come on. I wish I could just watch the next episode. But that's a compliment, not a criticism. Like I said at the top of this podcast, you know, I do understand where some fans are coming from, that they're wanting Hunter and or the rest of the Bad Batch to be more proactive than reactive. Mm-hmm. But I think this, for me, is really a, you know, engage with the story that you're being presented with. That's not a, like, oh, whoops, we the writers forgot to make Hunter proactive. That is the story. And yeah, valid to say, oh, I don't like it because it doesn't feel like its foot is on the gas as a taste thing. But it is so clearly, to me, as this season heads towards the end, this is about Hunter resisting the call of knowing what he wants to do, knowing who he kind of wants to be, but being concerned about it and feeling like it's too dangerous, not knowing how to reconcile taking care of the people around him with suddenly becoming this different idea of a soldier that is this, right, you know, just virtuous hero who goes around the galaxy helping everyone else, regardless of the risk to his family.
Yeah. And I look with the story of Hunter, I think once you get to some next big chapters, the next big choices, or even at the end of his journey, I think this is going to be a type of a show that will reward you by going back and really studying the moments and the beats and the choices of Hunter. I think it will be fulfilling to go back and see the whole story again with him.
Yeah, because I think it is just like you could approach it from a comic perspective, but I think it really works dramatically. Like, you can make a great smash cut video of Hunter going, no, we're not going to do that. Yeah. Okay, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's his journey. Do you have some hopes for the next episode?
Pedal to the... No, look, here's the thing. I think we're going to have some big things coming. I'm not expecting it all to be a big old fight shootout and... you know, we know the larger Rebel Alliance isn't coming because they're not there yet. I don't even know. I think Rex could factor into it. Totally could. But I'm not even expecting that. I'm excited. I want to know what Rex was dealing with. Who was around him? Was he having a nice dinner with Ahsoka and Bail when all that stuff happened? I don't know. I don't necessarily. I'm not waiting. And I don't even know if I want Rex to come back in. I do love the use of Rex. But I think we're going to get this. I think we're going to have some quiet moments. I think we're going to have some psychological thriller action with Crosshair and Hunter. A My Dinner with Crosshair type of middle act of the story in next week's episode.
Yeah, I kind of can picture next week's episode being the exactly what you're talking about, My Dinner with Crosshair, of this real philosophical character conflict between Hunter and Crosshair, and really getting down to Hunter saying, like, you're not making your own choices, you know?
Yeah.
And Crosshair saying, like, no, I'm being a soldier. You're just flailing around like, you know, a sad mercenary. So that being one part of it. And then the other part of it, I think, is a good possibility of Omega and the Bad Batch recruiting their friends, you know, and those friends could be a really interesting list, right?
Yeah.
Everyone from Rex to, you know, is Sid going to get out there in the field? You know, this I'm spacing on the character's name right now, but the Deveronian from the last episode, is that they've built? Yeah, Durant. They've built a bond with. Is this reaching out to, you know, Cut? Yeah, lots of options of people that they have come across and they've helped that Omega would maybe want to go back to and go, like, you owe Hunter, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Cut LaCoin's a good one. By the way, this morning I was trying to think of Cut's name, and all the, you know, I know him very well as a character, and I just kept saying Suit, right? His name's Suit. No, wait, his wife's Sue. So many
it's characters. The super couple name,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the friends we made along the way type of ending could work for me. And, hey, you know, just draw comparisons to Mandalorian. Yeah, and I don't care. We've got some good characters that we've met along the way here, and if they factor in, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, Saw, I mean.
Yep.
There are a lot of people that they have now met, Trace and Rafa. I think most likely they go to Rex, right? And Rex says, "Here are the resources I have." How would you feel if Ahsoka showed up?
I'd be fine. I'd be totally fine. I would be fine. I don't, you know, I'm always going to trust. Filoni created this, and he's not necessarily. Who knows how day to day operations was? It's Jennifer Corbett's show, Brad Rouse's show. But I trust Dave Filoni when if Ahsoka's used, he's so protective. It's going to be used well. The character is my thoughts on it. So I'm open to it, but I don't necessarily want it.
Yeah, I wonder if it would be. I'm going to just agree with you. I any anxieties I have, I go, but they'll handle it well because it's Ahsoka.
Yes. Yeah.
Including and not even about like handling Ahsoka well, but I think. Including that, I don't think they will let it become the Ahsoka show. I know some people feel that way about her episode in Mandalorian. I feel like there's great Ahsoka stuff, but I felt like the Mandalorian and Grogu's journey was absolutely front and center in that. And I don't think she's just going to show up and it's going to become the Ahsoka show. I think it'll still be about Hunter and the Bad Batch.
Yep.
There's that line from Crosshair. I was hoping for the whole squad, but you'll do. How did you take that? Did you take that just as like Crosshair has had this kind of wooden pick in his teeth, literally, but sticking in his craw of like they injured him. He's got a scar. They're traitors in his mind that he wants just for his own sort of like personal validation that he wants to get them all. Or is there something more practical to what he's saying when he says, but you'll do?
I actually think practical. I think what the first description you got, it makes a lot of sense. And I think you'll get that, right? I think, I think you get some of that kind of like dance. Like I keep saying My Dinner with Crosshair just because I love making My Dinner with Andre references and have for 20 years of my comedy career. But I also took a little bit of, great, let's get those chips back in kind of thought. Whether it's specifically that or not, of just like, we got some good resources, or he just wants to torture them slowly, like a Bond villain, maybe that could work.
Yeah, no, I think that is very, very possible. And maybe that it could be the plot as well of Crosshair using Hunter as bait to get the rest of the squad. So yeah, I'm very, very curious about that. I got one other question for you about future episodes. Mm-hmm. So early in the episode, Crosshair and Rampart are talking about an operation. And in that discussion is when they're saying, like, you know, we're gathering all the viable clones. We're taking care of Kamino. Did you have a sense that the operation that Crosshair and Rampart are talking about is just getting off of Kamino and shutting it down? Or did you feel like there is kind of a larger plan that they're talking about with that operation that they're using those viable clones for?
Good question. You stumped me, but I still think they are going to burn the offices down at Kamino. So somehow that has something to do with it, but to take the clones with Rampart. See, I don't trust Rampart just to be like, we need some resources. Let's load them up and go send them out into the world. I think they have to be careful. I think they're wary of, especially if clones like Gregor are deserting, that's why they need the blind loyalty of the new troops coming in. And so that they're going to find a way to use them in a very special way. And I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know if we want to put them on the front lines and waste them, so to speak, because they don't really believe they're going to be at war. So maybe hunting down Republic holdouts, Jedi even possibly. I know the Inquisitor's coming. That's a different program. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I could see some kind of use there.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a little bit of ambiguity there for me, and it could just be like the operation to leave Kamino and to track down the Bad Batch and eliminate them and maybe hold on to Omega if they think that she has value. I mean, the way he said to Nala Se, like, I have need of her scientist, and Omega, she's an interesting sample. We'll keep her. It could just be as simple as that. But I also just was intrigued by, like, is there kind of like a bigger plan, maybe even something that would bring some of our young rebels together to stop something that they're trying to do.
Mm, like that.
So very intrigued. Last thing for me, Hondo Watch continues for 2 more episodes.
you're holding out hope?
I'm holding out for Hondo.
I like that.
Not the 80s song, holding out for a hero. Yeah. Holding out for a Hondo.
Well done. Well done. I would love it. I do want to see Hondo again. There should be a whole documentary on Hondo. Yeah, still got time. Maybe ends the season. Maybe they break out Hunter, or they can't break out Hunter, and then Sid's like, well, there's one person I think that can help us, and then there's a knock on the door. You rang?
I was just going to say that. I can absolutely see them barging into Sid's office and saying, you have to help us. And like, sorry, I can't. Who are you on the phone with? Hondo.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I don't know if you heard this. This show's beautiful. And the music's great.
Gorgeous. The music's great. The visuals are amazing. And I love my wife. These things are all true.
All true.
And I can say them all the time.
Every day.
Excellent. Yeah. We always like to wrap up with a fun question about toys. Ken, if you could have a figure or toy inspired by this episode or a character in it, what do you want?
Look, if this is truly the end of Lama Sue, this is a big character in Star Wars lore. It really is to me. Give me a commemorative 6-inch Black Series Lama Sue Bad Batch version.
I like that. That's going to be a tall, tall action figure. That's going to defy 6 inches for sure.
Yeah, there's about a 9-incher. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, 9-inch. A nice 9-inch Black Series Lama Sue. Yeah. I kind of feel like with this new proto Stormtrooper, man, that's a whole line, right? We're going to have Black Series of that. We'll have vintage. We'll have Funko Pop. We'll have bed sheets with proto Stormtrooper. It'll be everywhere.
Proto Troop.
Proto Troop sounds like something that you take to just even out your digestive system, doesn't it?
I need one right now.
I need to take some Proto Troop. My other idea, and I think I might have said this recently, but I saw it again. I want a gonky game table, like maybe like those sit down arcade games at the pizza places where you could play Mrs. Pac-Man.
Yeah, that's great. Oh yeah, two sided. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I want to sit down just like Wrecker and Omega, and I want to play on gonky.
Yeah, I'm there for that. Oh man, if they could add that to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, you'd big line to play on gonky.
Yeah.
And then they can have somebody dressed as Omega who just beats everybody.
That'd be great.
What did you do when you went to Disneyland? Well, I was defeated by Omega. It was great. Anyway, a ton of great options for this episode. Any final thoughts on War Mantle before we wrap up?
This is a classic. I'll tell you, it's an instant classic. I think this would be fun to rewatch, revisit, and rediscuss over the years.
Absolutely. Just a great, great movement forward in the story and great literal and emotional nightmare of the power of the Empire and the heroism of the clones. Super cool, super important. So that is our look at episode 14, War Mantle. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would love to. We always seem to get a lot of new ears on the Bad Batch episode reviews. So welcome. We are Force Center. We are on Twitter, Force Center Pod. Instagram and YouTube as well. You can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audio book on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Some people this week picking up the Speculate Responsibly t-shirt. I saw that. You can find us a lot of spots, including Amazon Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, all the places you can find podcasts. And don't forget, you can support us directly if you so choose by going to patreon.com/Force Center. If you want to follow me, you can go to @KedNapsuck or my website, KedNapsuck.com. As of right now, I still have a live comedy show in L.A. on August 31st at the Ha Ha Cafe. Late night show on a Tuesday night. We'll see. But right now, it's still going. You can get information on my website. Joseph, where can they go for your wonderful work?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is @JosephScrimshaw. I'm still having a ton of fun on TikTok and then sharing on the other social media. Just some adventures with action figures, and I look forward to eventually getting some good Bad Batch action figures to share and not open right there on TikTok. You can also find all of my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, and shows I've worked on, my other podcast, Obsessed, all that on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Gonky and Lula, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work across 500,000 apps and websites so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context. Plus, tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.